and welcome to The Seagull, the place to stay up to date on everything you need to know about the 102nd Intelligence Wing at Otis Air National Guard Base, right here from beautiful Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I'm Tim Sandlin from Public Affairs, and let me get you up to speed on what's going on here at the Wing. Welcome to November 2024. We're still finishing off the Halloween candy, the holiday season is upon us, and Veterans Day is right around the corner. To everyone who has served or is currently serving, thank you for what you do, have done, and are going to do for your fellow citizens and the United States of America. If you encounter someone who thanks you for your service and you don't know what to say, simply tell them that it was your honor and privilege to serve. Now then, let's get started. First, we hear from the commander of the 202nd ISRG, Colonel Brian McCaffrey, as he shares his thoughts for the upcoming RSD and this month's command message.
I'm Colonel Brian McCaffrey, commander of the 202nd Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Group. Last month, Colonel Armijo spoke to you about the changes the Air Force is making to meet challenges of great power competition. This month, I would like to continue that discussion and talk about the Air Force's unit of action, the Combat Wing. To achieve a more competitive posture, the Department of the Air Force is implementing major changes centered on developing people, generating readiness, projecting power, and developing integrated capabilities. The Air Force will project power through the concept of the Combat Wing. Our bases are no longer uncontested sanctuaries. The mission of assuring the base against kinetic, cyber, and information attacks, as well as preparing and employing the unit of action to take our fight to our enemies, are both full-time jobs. To ensure we are organized most effectively, we will construct wings that, for the first time since the early 1990s, deploy as a unified warfighting capability, a cohesive unit of action. The unit will be tasked with planning and executing the joint warfighting functions designed to seize the initiative and effectively implement mission command principles. Due to the increasing complexity of competition, this future construct will separate combat, base, and institutional missions into distinct organizations with separate commanders. Whether deploying or employing an operational force or executing the mission of assuring our bases, we must have mission-focused organizations structured to accomplish wartime tasks. Central to the combat wing structure is a standardized three-tiered wing structure comprised of a command and staff layer, a mission layer, and a sustaining layer. The command layer encompasses the command team, special staff, and A staff. The mission layer generates combat power, and the sustaining layer ensures sustained operations for the combat wing, whether deployed or employed in place. These combat wings will enable the Air Force to better articulate capability, readiness, and risk to the Joint Force and Congress. The Air Force will continue to implement these changes in the coming months. Please ask your supervisors and chains of command for more details. Thank you.
Warrant officers are back in the Air Force. There are limited positions available across the Air Force Reserves, and the Air National Guard in the cyber and information technology fields. Here's a little history on the returning status, as well as a little information about what it entails and the process for applying for a position. Warrant officers are a category of grades within the United States military, with roots dating back to the early days of the American Revolution. The role of the warrant officer within the United States Air Force has a much shorter history, as the Air Force was established as a separate branch in 1947 and the warrant status was discontinued after just three decades. Warrant officer positions were first created in 1775 when the Continental Congress authorized their creation to serve as technical specialists. These personnel were responsible for handling specific tasks such as gunnery, engineering, and ordnance. The intention was to provide subject matter expertise and technical proficiency within the ranks, and warrant officers were given authority and responsibility over their respective fields. During World War II, the need for skilled technical specialists grew significantly. The Army Air Forces recognized the value of warrant officers and began to use them to fill technical positions. In 1942, the Army established a Warrant Officer Flight Training Program, which provided specialized training in aviation-related fields, such as navigation, maintenance, and engineering. When the Air Force gained its independence as a separate branch in 1947, the Warrant Officer position was carried over from the Army Air Forces. The Air Force discovered it did not have a need for warrant officers in the same way that the other services did. Primarily focused on air combat missions, the technical expertise of warrant officers was not as critical as it was in the other branches. In those early years of the Air Force, warrant officers were primarily used for administrative and support roles. As the Air Force grew and became more complex, the need for technical specialists became more apparent. In 1954, the Air Force established the Air Force Warrant Officer Program, which was designed to provide technical expertise in specific areas such as aircraft maintenance, engineering, and intelligence. The Air Force Warrant Officer Program was designed to provide a career path for enlisted personnel who had specialized skills and experience. Warrant officers were given additional training and education in their respective fields, and they were given increased responsibility and authority. The program was found to be successful, and the Air Force continued to use warrant officers in technical roles throughout the 60s and 70s. But by the 1980s, the Air Force began to phase out warrant officers. The decision was based on the idea that the Air Force could meet its technical needs through other means, such as civilian contractors and enlisted personnel with specialized training. By the early 1990s, through separations and retirements, warrant officers disappeared from the Air Force landscape entirely. In recent years, there's been a renewed interest in the warrant officer position within the Air Force. In 2019, the Air Force announced that it was considering reinstating the warrant officer position to address a shortage of technical experts in certain fields. During the Air Force Association's 2024 Warfare Symposium, Air Force Chief of Staff General David W. Alvin announced that warrant officers were returning to the ranks of the Air Force within the cyber and information technology professions. Just 8 months later, the inaugural class of warrant officer candidates started their first day at the Air Force's new warrant officer school located at Maxwell Air Force Base, Alabama. The history of warrant officers in the Air Force is complex and evolving. While they have played an important role in military history, their relevance within the Air Force has varied over time. As the Air Force continues to meet the challenges of the great power competition, the reintroduction of the warrant officer should better attract and develop cutting-edge talent, specifically within information technology and cyber fields.
Joining me on this segment is Lieutenant Colonel Brendan Simison, Deputy Commander of the 253rd Cyberspace Engineering Installation Group, and Major Chip Barlow, Commander of the 212th Engineering Installation Squadron. Welcome to the program, gentlemen. Starting us off with our first question, Major Barlow, what is the need for warrant officers here at the wing, specifically at the 212th Engineering Installation Squadron, and what specific roles and responsibilities would they be expected to hold?
Great question. Good afternoon. Warrant officers are highly skilled, single-track specialty officers. The warrant officer's primary task as a leader is to serve as a technical expert. In the 212th, our first warrant officer will be assigned to the squadron staff and serve as a technical advisor, providing authoritative guidance to the commander and senior managers on cyberspace systems capabilities, recommendations on potential exploitations of new technologies, and strategies for meeting changing mission needs.
Thank you for that rundown, Major. Colonel Simison, how does the application process for becoming an Air Force warrant officer differ from joining as an enlisted member or commissioning as a regular officer? And what are some of the basic requirements or barriers to entry you foresee?
So first, I'd encourage members to carefully review the eligibility requirements that were in the announcement, in the official announcement, and the eligibility determination worksheet that was attached to it. There won't be any second chance, so when you submit the application, you need to make sure that it's right. This position in the 212th is being advertised through a nationwide advertisement. But that application process is being managed by the National Guard Bureau. The applications are submitted and vetted by the National Guard Bureau and then forwarded to the unit to schedule interviews and identify the selected members. It's worth noting that selecting officials may identify alternates because some candidates may be applying to multiple wings for multiple positions. all at the same time. So we need to potentially identify alternates.
Quite the process. Thank you for that explanation.
Continue. Some specific aspects of the warrant officer eligibility. So like an officer, you must have the ability to get 10 years as an officer and still have 20 years to retire, which for most people is about 42 years of age, with plus any time that you already have in. It's also unique that this is only open to currently serving Air National Guard members. So you can't be on active duty and then, hey, I want to go after this opportunity in the Guard. You must be a Guard member currently, which is pretty unique. The next thing I want to cover is you must have at least 1 year of satisfactory service in the grade of E5 or above. So you have to have some sort of technical expertise in the Air Force, in the Air Force or another service at the same time. Members must also have a technical letter of recommendation attesting to their technical skill and ability, and an endorsement letter of recommendation from their group or wing commanders with emphasis on the whole person. Members must have a Armed Forces Qualification Test Category 3 Alpha score of 50 or higher. And for the 212 specifically, we'll be selecting candidates for a 17 whiskey position. And that requires a minimum of 36 months of documented operational experience with enterprise IT or warfighter communication systems, expertise in voice and data networking, local and wide area networks, network planning, and or cybersecurity. There's also a requirement for a DoD-approved industry certification commensurate with the Information Assurance Level 2 certification. And then one final note is warrant officer training school slots have been allocated for this position. It's critical that no slots go unfilled. So I would expect that NGB will severely limit waivers and exceptions to policy under this advertisement.
Excellent, sir. Thank you for that detail. And Major Barlow, back to you. How will warrant officers fit into the rank and file of your organization? Will they have supervisory responsibilities, or are they going to be relied on simply more for just to be advisors, or relying on their technical expertise to leadership? And where do you expect them to fit in the pre-existing organization in the unit?
So the intent is for warrant officers to serve as a professional cyberspace experts and technical advisors. At the squadron level, they will be assigned as project engineers and cyberspace systems integrators. These positions require tremendous depth of understanding with cyber infrastructure and how it supports mission sets across the DoD. Our warrant officers can expect to deploy as well as perform their duties at home station, supporting everything from squadron level all the way up to a MAGCOM.
Thank you, sir. And with that, upon selection as a warrant officer, what is the next step in the process? Where and what is the duration of that school? Will there be a follow-on technical school? And what can one expect in their first few years as a warrant officer?
So good questions. And some of those were actually waiting for guidance from HAF and from NGB. However, upon selection, the individual will work aggressively with recruiting and force support to ensure their readiness for the warrant officer training school. As Colonel Simpson mentioned, those seats are already allocated. So our individual, just we need to make sure we get through the process as quickly and completely as possible to ensure that they're ready to attend that training. However, the expectation, there's no currently known formal AFSC awarding course for the warrant officers. However, the expectation is that our new warrant officer will attend mission-specific training at the Lightning Force Academy to fill any gaps in knowledge or training. The first few years will focus on role refinement, technical leadership development, and mission-specific training. The promotion and development path for warrant officers is being worked by senior leadership and is expected to follow the timelines of our sister services.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. And finally, to both of you, what are your thoughts regarding this return of the warrant officer program? What are the benefits, and do you see any challenges? Just any and all thoughts you have going into this new endeavor.
So the reintroduction of warrant officers is a tremendous opportunity for the Air Force at all levels. Warrant officers provide the unique capability of having the appropriate rank, extensive professional experience, and aligned with the depth of technical knowledge needed to drive modernization of our cyberspace capabilities. As Colonel Simonson mentioned earlier, they're truly the technical experts. They have the professional development and the technical expertise to make the changes that we need across the Air Force.
So I see a sort of a challenge with the full-time staff. Currently, NGB has said that we're not allowed to have this position as an AGR position. There's also no technician PD that would be associated with this position. So if any of the full-time staff is interested in applying for a job like this, they have to be willing to go find other full-time employment, at least for the short term.
Excellent. Thank you, gentlemen. Certainly a lot of information to digest for anyone who wants to move forward with this opportunity.
The Air Force's Innovation Initiative is in full swing. Innovation is a mainstay of how the Air Force and Air National Guard conduct business. How we respond to technological change and evolving threats is crucial to maintaining our operational edge. This is not just the responsibility of research labs and headquarters, it's a call to action for every member of our wing.
Could you tell me a little bit about what the innovation team is and what role you play in that team?
So currently across the wing, there's numerous initiatives that focus on innovation in terms of Air Force lines of effort specifically. So the current hat that I wear right now is as the CPI manager, or Continuous Improvement Innovation, CI2, as it's been renamed recently. So for that role, a lot of what I do is ensure that folks that are looking to get green belt certification or yellow belt certification for that Six Sigma or Lean certification taken care of, I help them achieve that. Additionally, working with Colonel Gordon the past year or so, we've recognized that there's a lot of things that we do around here that are innovative and that are providing solutions to problems that pop up along the day and aren't necessarily the traditional Six Sigma, improve a manufacturing process kind of thing. So in that line of effort, in terms of looking for just do it improvement initiatives across the wing, I've kind of tried to bring in as many different organizations from across the wing that kind of are working in the same direction. So there's the Spark Tank and Spark Cell that we have on base as well too. And then also statewide, there's the Massachusetts National Guard Innovation Team, or MANGIT, initiative that's being led up at JFHQ. We've had some good productive meetings with them. And basically just trying to get the word out there for members of the wing that if you have a good idea of how you could improve how we do our business in the wing, to reach out, let us know, and we'll try and make it happen. I know we've got some good success stories that we can highlight through this meeting too, which looking forward to talking about that if we can. Yeah.
So how does the innovation team on the wing level affect Big Air Force or the Massachusetts Air National Guard or just the bigger picture?
So big picture, and one of the case studies I can kind of bring up, which I know you guys are interested in diving into more, is basically ways that we can either save the taxpayer money, ways that we can save airmen's time, and also how we can just improve overall the way that the Air Force does business, right? So at all of those levels, one of the instances that we have that we've had success with on this base through 3D printing. So by sourcing a printer and the filaments to support our projects, basically slashed pennies on the dollar projects that we would have had to go through traditional means to field solutions for some problems on base, particularly in the IT realm, for some of the actual hardware that we use. And that's a use case we can definitely explore more if you guys would like to.
Right now I kind of want to break it down and talk about what the Air Force defines as innovation and why that's important.
To sum it up, looking to kind of, as I outlined earlier, do things that are cost effective, enhance the mission, and make things more efficient.
And why is innovation important? Why has it become a priority?
To harken back to a lot of our senior leadership's focus on the pacing challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's throwing out their 2027 pacing challenge, near peer fights, right? So in order for us to be ready now and fight tonight, we have to be able to go into conflict with what we have on the shelf, and sometimes we have to field solutions rapidly, and that rapid innovation, that rapid production of new components or new processes that can help us fight and win are key to that big picture.
So how does the Air Force, what are they looking for, and how do they decide what to invest in when it comes to these different ideas?
So it depends on the program, right? So I can speak more to the Green Belt side. For those projects, those go up to higher headquarters, and basically if you can prove that you're saving time, money, resources, that's something that they're looking to capture and make sure that you're, you know, moving the ball forward.
Great. So we're going to talk a little bit more about the 3D printing program a little bit later, but can you talk about any other success stories that we've had with the innovation program?
So one of the initial efforts that we had, it's not going to sound like a success, but the process was a success, right? There was a requirement for us to look at some ways that the base handles its internal communications for getting information out to the masses. And basically, we had a team come together and look through a variety of different communication options that could be available to commanders or to the wing commander or group commanders for recall purposes like that. We ended up going with we didn't end up going with a new solution, but we identified potentially a way to refine or recalibrate how current processes are actually implemented and used. But through the process, we identified a whole bunch of, you know, backup methods and best practices for things for communication efforts for members of the wing to, you know, collaborate in a secure manner kind of thing.
That's awesome. So what are some of the challenges that you face when fostering innovation or through the process?
Just finding folks that have ideas that want to share them. So just getting the word out there is some of the hardest part in some ways, especially on a tight drill weekend. There's only so many hours where we can kind of try and get everybody together because we have a lot of other readiness items that everybody has to try and knock out. So just want to get the word out there that we're here, we're looking for ideas, trying to find a way to, you know, improve how we do work.
So what do you think would help fostering this culture of innovation and encouraging more airmen to bring their ideas forward?
So methods like this, right? So getting the word out there. Also, it's also a mindset change too, right? So it doesn't matter where you sit, what level that you're at. If you have an idea of how you could potentially fix a process, those like I said, just do it initiatives. Those are things that, you know, any airman can bring forward from the lowest ranking all the way to the highest ranking, how we can fix things and make us faster, smarter, more agile.
So let's say there's an airman out there who has a big idea that will save the wing money, time, or make us more productive. How would they start in pitching that idea, and how would they go about executing it?
There's multiple ways. First, Air Force answers, work through your chain of command, go to your supervisor, right, particularly if it's a local work center area, and you can just have the guts to try, right, I would say. But also bring things to us, reaching out to our Teams page, our actual website. There's a SharePoint on the 102 Intel Wing page with all of our contact information. But then also there's other venues that come up periodically. So, for instance, this past fiscal year, the Massachusetts Air National Guard sponsored a initiative called Patriot Pitch. It's basically like Shark Tank, if you know familiar with the TV show on CNBC, where it was looking for folks that had new and innovative ideas that just needed the resourcing and chain of command backing to get things fielded. So we did have one person from the wing who went up to JFHQ and made their pitch. So there's opportunities like that are out there, and we're happy to facilitate folks if they're interested as well.
So what advice would you have for an airman who might be hesitant to bring their idea forward, or maybe doesn't have a full plan, but they'd like to get the ball rolling?
Come and meet up. So we try and have our meetings on the Saturday or Sunday of drill weekend. And then for the four-day sets, it can be a little bit easier to have it on a Saturday because you don't have to worry about folks trying to cram in all of their things as they're just coming in for having been out for a month, right? So the flexibility of having that Thursday, Friday. Looking to have them those meetings be held on Saturdays right here in Building 170. So be on the lookout for the invites, and happy to take any ideas or anybody that comes and wants to share what they want to do. Just bring your ideas. And to your point, even if it's a, you know, partial idea or not sure where to go, like, we have enough people in the room where we can try and figure it out and point you in the right direction. Or it could have already been something, it could be something that's already been worked on before. And we could point you in the direction to a solution as well.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Master Sergeant Gao, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I understand you have been leading an initiative, a local initiative, with 3D printing. Can you talk a little bit about that and what it is?
Sure. So 3D printing essentially is a fancy term for it is additive manufacturing technology. And essentially what you have is an enclosure box that's about this big. And then you're using a heated nozzle and you're using plastic filament on a spool. And what that does is it melts the plastic and it draws a picture on this metal plate that's inside the enclosure. And essentially you can create almost anything. It's kind of a creative, imaginative tool, right? So between the software that we leverage on the computer to build a 3D model, or some open source different models that are available online, you can, within anywhere from 10 minutes to several hours, you can print an object.
Awesome. So what problem did you identify throughout the wing, and how did 3D printing solve that problem?
Right. So I work in information technology, so a lot of the problems I face are technical and mostly like computer-related or server-related, things like that. So what we actually did was we had what's called a tech refresh, where we had 100 machines that had come towards the end of life of their use. So your desktop computer, your laptop, generally 3 to 5 years, they all get replaced with new ones, and it's in a phased approach. So one issue we had was the network interface card, which is a NIC, which is basically where you plug the internet cable in. That piece was on all the old machines, but when we ordered the 100 new ones, it did not come with that NIC. And the problem was it mounts to the computer, the box that sits on the desk, it mounts to that with a metal bracket. The metal bracket that the old computers used was not the same size as the new computers. It was much smaller. So the problem was that bracket was not commercially available. We researched for several days. The only way to buy it was to purchase the cards and the bracket at the same time, which was exponentially more money than we were allotted to spend on that project.
What did you do with the 3D printer, and how did that solve this problem?
So what I did first was we had one bracket. That was the correct size. We only had one in the entire building. I took a accurate measuring tool called a caliper, right? And I measured all the different dimensions of that bracket. And then I built a 3D model of that bracket using CAD software on my personal laptop. And what I was able to do was take that model, convert it to a special file type that the 3D printer understands how to read. And then I was able to print one, something similar to this right here. I printed one as a prototype, and it took me about 5 or 6 tries to get all the measurements right. Because you can see there's different size holes, there's different measurements of openings and different pieces that make it fit that machine perfectly. So after about 7 iterations, I was able to print 6 at a time within about 3 hours. And then when you scale that out, eventually I was able to print all 100 for all the machines. So what that allowed us to do was spend, I want to say, about $33 in-house for 100 brackets versus approximately $25,000 to buy the new card with the bracket included. So after that cost-saving analysis, it was pretty clear that this is a good model that we can use for other problems.
Great. So you came up with your idea that saved us time and saved us a lot of money that allowed us to be productive and make this happen. And that's you worked with the innovation team to do that?
Yes and no. So Lieutenant Hall, who runs the innovation initiative for the wing, I do attend the meetings regularly. This was something that was kind of separate, where we had local funds within my unit specifically. The one thing that with this specific scenario was we needed a solution pretty quickly. We had funding available to purchase a 3D printer through our local funds. So what I did was I coordinated with my supervision. Went through some regulation, understood, you know, what we were allowed to purchase and not purchase. Once we determined that 3D printer was, you know, we got the green light to get a hold of it, I got it, solved the problem, created the devices, and essentially, solved that issue. How I want to work moving forward with the innovation team is to show this as a proof of concept. So it's like, hey, this is something that I figured out locally within my unit. There's no reason the rest of the wing can't benefit from this program. And I'd like to work with them to develop a program of, okay, here's the hardware you need, here's the software you need, here's a little bit of training that I can put together and run a couple classes and run everybody through it, and then we can replicate that across the wing. And honestly, I'd like to see that replicated throughout the enterprise, because there's no reason that other, you know, other units, other military branches can't utilize this technology. It's fairly inexpensive, especially when you solve a problem that's several thousand dollars. It paid for itself within the first day of me utilizing it.
Right, and that was my next question. And how do you think this 3D printing program can affect the Air National Guard, big Air Force, and how you see that kind of shifting things?
So something I've noticed, I've been in the military almost 16 years between Army and Air Force. A lot of what I've seen is, well, we've always done it this way. Why would we change the way we do things?
Right.
I don't really like that statement. And I've really been an outside-the-box thinker for my entire career. And usually I take that as a challenge to, all right, well, not only can we change it, but here's what would happen if we did. So I think leveraging technology like this, it doesn't just have to be in an IT environment, right? I'm also creating things like awards and trophies and things for morale. And we have a lot of events across the military, right, for retirements or going away or people switching units. And I noticed that we spend anywhere from $70 to $150 for a trophy. I've replicated some of the things we have locally for approximately $5. And people actually enjoyed that better because it was made in-house by the people that they worked with, and it just had more sentimental value to it. So I think enterprise-wide across the Air Force and across the military in general, it's kind of a low-hanging fruit opportunity of a little bit of training, a little bit of upfront cost initially, but it'll pay for itself, and it also gives you some more skill sets that you wouldn't necessarily get in your day-to-day, a little mechanical engineering, a little imagination. There's not a lot of room for that in today's military, I found, but this is a cool avenue to kind of explore your creative side, solve problems, and do something outside the box.
So with that, what are some of the challenges that you faced through this process? Did you find it hard to bring a new idea and change things when they've been the same way for so long, or what did that look like?
That's been the biggest challenge of my career, is trying to initiate change, because I have to not only have a good idea, but then I have to convince other people that it's a good idea. And a lot of the times you do have a lot of backing, but it'll die two levels up, right? And with the innovation program, I think it's a great opportunity to push these things outside of local work centers, because a lot of my ideas don't leave the building, but then I come to the higher meeting where the entire wing is involved, and then other people are like, oh, I never thought of using that. And I've already been asked to send some of my procedures to other units in other states just to let them know, like, hey, this isn't actually that expensive. You don't need a $10,000 commercial printer or device. There's a lot of cheaper solutions out there that do a great job. So that's definitely been a big challenge where I know it's a solid idea. I just have to really prove that to my leadership.
So going off of that, how do you think that other branches and other wings can benefit from developing an innovation program such as this and inviting people such as yourself to bring their ideas that will save us time and money and make us more productive?
So some of the things that I've been trying to push with this program is collaborating between other units and other branches. In my field, in IT and in the cyber world, I've been starting to coordinate with Army units and get a lot of exposure to that. I think that the benefits from working with this program and bringing it to other units and other military branches, you're really developing a pathway for communication on both ways, because the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, Coast Guard, they could all be working on something really awesome on their side, and we have no idea. And we're reinventing the wheel, doing it on our side to solve the same issue, but it takes us twice as long. So really developing that communication between different branches and different units, I think is critical for the Air Force to change in a positive way. Because a lot of people will come up with a great idea and they don't want it to leave their area because, oh, well, I thought of this and I don't want anybody to take credit for it. But same team, same fight, that applies to, you know, all branches, civilian, military. We work with contractors. If there's anything that I think, you know, can benefit the whole, I'm going to put it out there. And if people choose to adopt it, great. If not, that's okay too. But I don't think any good idea should be kept, but, you know, by the wayside. I think it should be put out there as loud as possible.
Right. So with the advancements of technology and emerging trends, how do you think that this 3D printing program will help the Air Force in the future and in the long run?
So I think this is the beginning of more, like I said, more change and more initiatives. The fact that I was able to put this together within, I mean, not even 3 months, we acquired the printer, and then I already solved multiple problems with this bracket being a big one, just because of the financial you know, aspect of it, right? I think it's a great proof of concept that shows everyone else around, like, hey, this was something that I thought a year ago would never happen. And not only is it happening, but it's happening, and it's snowballing into something that's getting a lot of attention faster than I can provide insight to it. So I think it's the first step in the right direction, and I'm so happy to see it come to fruition. And I think there's a lot of great talent, and there's a lot of good ideas out there. And I hope that this convinces people that you know, if you have a good idea, it will be heard. You might just have to say it more than once.
So from your experience, if there's an airman out there who has a great idea, such as your 3D printing program, what advice do you have for them to get started and share their idea?
So a lot of my pre-thought on all this was just drawing and writing out like initiatives. And for me, it was more of like a vision statement where this is my idea, but this is where I think it can go, and kind of setting goals for myself. So I don't just, all right, let's buy the printer, let's set it up, and then we're just printing, you know, paperweights and desk toys, right? It's I had a plan before I even bought the printer. So I would say, if you want to get started with an idea, write everything down, start talking to your peers about it, see what other people say. You might get people excited about that idea, and then all of a sudden you might have help. And I've had an abundance of people that have tried to get involved and have contributed ideas that I wouldn't have thought of. So the program's growing exponentially. So write it down, talk to your peers, and you know, keep it going. Keep pushing that idea.
So do you have any other projects that you're working on right now that could benefit Big Air Force?
I have a couple things. One of my other initiatives, I call it the ACT, which is an advanced cyber training environment. Earlier this year, I attended an exercise called Cyber Yankee, and it was essentially cyber defenders were on a network, and then they had that's called the blue team, and then the other side of the house is called the red team, and essentially they're trying to get into that network and either steal data, you know, access systems and networks they're not supposed to, things like that. And they had a really cool virtualized environment where all of this took place. So we actually were able to bring our own laptops, get on the Wi-Fi, and this was an Army-run event, by the way, and everything was done virtually. And I asked, hey, is this a network that we're able to access, you know, in my unit or other units? And unfortunately, it's not, because you have to be coded a very specific kind of cyber unit, right? And it's above my pay grade to understand what that code actually is. I just know that I'm not it. So what I did was I actually applied for the innovation funding, and for 2 years in a row, I put this giant package in, and it got denied a couple times. Which I'm not trying to say that's, you know, a deterrent for you to go absolutely apply for that program. It's excellent. I think I just didn't have the right verbiage to convey what my idea really was. But what I did was I found some old servers that were going to be decommissioned, i.e. thrown away. I repurposed them, and now I'm actually building a virtual environment where we can deploy a very similar environment to the one that I experienced at that exercise. I'm really excited about that initiative as well. Because again, I think that's something that can go up through enterprise-wide, provide a lot of training opportunities. It'd be really good for retention to get people interested in projects that are outside their normal duties, right? But most importantly, it provides a sandbox environment to test ideas and programs and scripts and a lot of that real techie stuff that we don't really have a lot of time during the day to test, right? But this environment, you can deploy a whole environment, you can, you know, test codes. Things can break, you just erase it and you start over. It's pretty great, and it's hard to understand why we don't currently have that capability. And I'm not aware of any other unit. I know the Army has a few things like that, and I'm just trying to get the Air Force on the same page. So that's something that I'm working on. I'm very passionate about. It's still in its infancy, but again, I have a lot of interested parties that are reaching out, and I have software engineers, cybersecurity engineers, system administrators, a lot of talent that's helping me put that together. And again, it's growing fast, so I'm trying to get underneath it, but I'm excited to see where that goes as well.
Yeah. Did you say you had another project, or is that the one that you're working on right now?
I think that's about it. I do have some other 3D models I'm working on, just, you know, pieces that are a little bit different than the plate that we discussed. Again, I've replicated some trophies and awards and things like that, and a lot of morale devices, which has been fun because it's kind of a little less stressful than some of the things that have a pretty strict timeline. So, yeah, those are my two main projects that I'm working on right now.
Yeah, that is awesome. And how do you think that leadership can best support their airmen who have good ideas? Do you think that there's enough opportunity to amplify their voices or make them feel heard or get their feedback?
I've been very fortunate. My leadership has been very receptive to my ideas. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. I would just urge anyone in a supervisory position, you know, including myself, I always tell myself this, don't say no right away. Do the research, listen to the idea, and don't tell someone, well, we've never done that before, so why would we try that? I think part of innovation is changing what's routine, right, and trying new things. So safely and in a controlled environment, try the ideas. You know, it's okay if ideas fail, because sometimes you get better ideas because it failed. So I think it's really important that if someone brings an idea to the table, you listen to it and be totally receptive about what they're trying to convey.
Awesome. So lastly, is there anything else you'd like to add about your project or the innovation team or anything at all?
Sure. So in my industry, but honestly in the military as a whole, technology tends to move at a faster pace than the military does. I understand it. I understand when something works, don't fix it, right? Because it's not broken. I understand that. But there's always room for improvement. There's always room for efficiency. Again, we talk about innovation. We talk about the green belt programs and process improvement. I think, you know, a lot of work centers probably work great and they're efficient and everything's going well. But if you can cut time off of processes, or you can make something more efficient, you can give time back to airmen, you know, soldiers, Marines, it applies to everybody. Time is a valuable resource and we only have so much. So the more we can improve upon our processes and make things more efficient, the more time we have to be creative and to innovate. So I would say it's really important to try to stay, keep up with technology, embrace change, and see, instead of being against it, let's look at how we can leverage it to work in our advantage.
The holidays can trigger many emotions, including challenging ones. In the most recent episode of Chevrons, we talk about how the best ways to handle the inevitable stress that comes with the upcoming holiday season for both deployers overseas and service members at home. How do we best handle our emotions? How do we take control of our reactions? How do we navigate the common stressors and triggers that arise during this time? How do we stay resilient and take care of ourselves during this time? Erin Fay, Massachusetts Air National Guard Military and Family Readiness Program Manager, gives her personal and professional advice to answer all these questions. If you are having difficulty managing your emotions and would like to seek help, there are several different resources available to you.
I'm in the military, and also I'm a military kid, so I grew up with two parents in the military who have both been deployed during the holidays. And then also, a couple years ago, I was away for the holidays as well while I was at training during Thanksgiving and the holiday Christmas time. That's what I celebrate. So seeing it from both perspectives, I kind of understand the challenges. I mean, I don't have children, so I'm sure my parents went through a lot of things that I might one day understand, but there's so many different unique obstacles and challenges that we all face that you don't even think of until you're in the moment.
Honoring emotions is the most important thing to start with.
Right.
If you feel guilty about being happy, you know, those are really mixed emotions. How am I here on this glorious morning? I've made all these plans for my child, and here is this day, and you said you celebrate Christmas, so we'll use that as our baseline.
Sure.
We're opening up presents and we're having a really great time, but our person isn't here. Is it okay to feel good?
Right.
Of course it's okay to feel good. You can also feel sad and loss and grief that it's not exactly the same, but you also want to be able to say, in the world of change and growth, things can be different and we can still have enjoyment and go ahead with them. There can be resentment, there can be hostility, and being able to accept all of those and take them for their face value, but really say what you want. And then I'm very passionate about goal setting as far as what your intention is. I want to have a holiday that includes my family with positive memories. That can be your simple goal.
Right.
And anything beyond that can be really fantastic. And sometimes with that, I understand that I'm going to feel negative emotions. I want to deal with them positively. And that could be writing a letter. That could be telling a story. And keeping that person there with them. Sometimes you can FaceTime and have those, bring them in as much as possible. What you don't want to do is fall on negative behaviors. So if you're feeling that anxiety and you know when you feel upset, you tend to overeat.
Right.
Okay, let's not do that. I feel guilty that they're not there. I'm going to overspend. We don't want to do that. I know that when my family comes over and there's going to be questions about it and maybe negative, maybe I'll overdrink. Okay, so we're not going to want to do that. How are we going to set ourselves up for, one, trying to protect ourselves against those behaviors, and then two, giving us some grace in case we don't exactly handle them well, right, and then have expectations that are realistic.
Chevrons is now available in video form. You can find us at chevrons.podcast on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Like and subscribe to see future episodes. We've got a fantastic one coming up at the end of the month. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for listening to The Seagull. For more news from the 102nd Intelligence Wing, or to learn more about the stories you heard on this program, head over to our website at www.102iw.ang.af.mil. or search for 102IW on any major social media platform.